You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Cavs, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers. As always, I am Chris Manning, your host and the site manager over at FearTheSword.com. Today's show is our last show before the draft. Trevor Magnotti is with me once again to break down the draft, just so everyone sort of knows what to expect post-draft. I will have a show tomorrow that I'm recording at the Quicklands Arena, aka The Rock, or Rock and Mortgage Fields, whatever we're going to call it, after draft night. So the Cavs are having some media there. Kobe Altman's going to talk. I'm going to have Jordan Zerm. Him and I are going to record as soon as the draft ends. We hear what Kobe Altman has to say. We're going to pod for like 30 minutes from the arena, give you guys our insight into that game. Friday, sometime in the afternoon, I'm going to record with Trevor Magnotti. That show is going to come out again, maybe on the weekend, maybe Monday morning, but more draft stuff for you. Next week, we'll have a bunch of free agency stuff. I'm going to be away. I'm not going to be working next week due to some personal stuff going on, but there will be a bunch of shows, including at least one interview with a player, hoping to squeeze in one more before I go away. Don't know if that one's going to happen or not, but there's at least one already done, so you'll get that in the feed next week, and I'm pretty excited about that. Looking at today's show again, this is just all about the draft. Now, I'm recording this at 9:10 p.m. on Wednesday, June 19th. If you're listening to this on the 20th, in the morning, in the afternoon, before the draft, whatever, things may have changed by then. As of right now, the Cavs have not made any trades. J.R. Smith has not been traded. We're not in a situation where things are in flux. The moves are happening. There is some stuff out there. You know, RJ Barrett, for example, looks like he's going to go to the Knicks. The Darius Garland thing looks like it's not going to happen there. Maybe he goes to New Orleans at 4, or a team gets up to 4 and takes Garland, but there's still that Garland to Cleveland sort of buzz out there. If you're looking at the ESPN mock, the Gavoni mock, they have them taking Bruno Fernando now instead of Lucas Simonic. So there's some changes there with what they're going to do at 26. That's a little bit interesting. In terms of teams looking to do salary dumps, you know, the Thunder apparently are interested in trying to get closer to ledger tax. So that means getting rid of Dennis Schroeder, getting rid of Steven Adams, someone like that. The Cavs, I think, make a lot of sense in that regard. But that's where we're at. It's, again, 9:10 p.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this, but this is the last draft bridge. Enjoy tonight's show. Again, tomorrow, Jordan Zerm and me, all about the draft, and we'll talk to you then. Welcome back to Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com. Joining me today, part two of our final draft breakdown, is Trevor Magnotti from Fear the Sword. Trevor, what's going on, buddy? People already know you're just like ready to get some rest in, but are you I just want to ask, when you are processing all the stuff that comes in, like, how much are you actually like checking in on every little Twitter thing that comes up? Or are you just like trying to ignore it until like it's actually like a real thing?
I'm ignoring it. All of this stuff is usually just conjecture. As we clearly knew, the Pelicans-Lakers trade kind of was coming, but clearly that Hawks-Nets deal came out of nowhere, and that's where stuff usually comes from. Usually the stuff that's reported doesn't actually happen. My best example of this is the 2000, I think it was 16 draft. That I think makes sense. It was 2016 or 2007 or 2015, where leading into the night, everybody thought that DeMarcus Cousins was going to be a Laker by the end of the night. The deal was basically done. They had all the assets in place. They had everything figured out. This was 2015. And the Kings ended the night with, instead of all of the Lakers' assets, they ended with Nick Stauskas. So that's kind of what I think of these types of trade conjecture things. So it's probably going to be a quick podcast, Chris.
Well, I just want to say, that's not, I agree with you. I think that there's a lot of smoke being put up there right now. But I want to say, when I think about, when I think about this draft, I think the, what, I think we, you and I talked about this a while back. I think the draft starts at 4 now. Right, like I guess it starts at 3 based on it seems like what the Knicks are doing or not doing, but I think the 80 trade and the Pelicans now having those two picks in the top 4 and David Griffin being poised to move in some capacity, I think there's just some interesting questions there. What do you make of, like, New Orleans is obviously taking Zion. They have Brandon Ingram, they have Josh Hart, they have Lonzo Ball, they still have Jrue Holiday. They have other they have some creative ways to move back or do other things. They seem like a logical trade partner. Just how do you feel like the AD trade and New Orleans in particular getting another pick and getting another high pick that is at right ahead of the Cavs? How does that affect how you view what's maybe going to go down on Thursday?
Well, I think it's a dangerous situation for the Cavs to be in because they replace the team in front of them being one of the dumber front offices with being one of the smarter ones.
David Griffin, breaking news, David Griffin, like, very, very smart and a very, very good at his job. Like, we don't have a ton of draft record stuff on him, but I think that guy is really smart. And I think, like, he's the exact right balance of analytics and valuing personnel and fit and, like, evaluating people as human beings and not just, like, things on a spreadsheet. Like, he's David Griffin, very good at his job, and has a very smart front office and plays them as well. And it seems like Gail Benson's just, like, letting him do his thing.
And at baseline, much better than Rob Pelinka, which it's a high bar,
look,
I know.
Yeah, but super difficult to be better at your job than, like, the dude who lies about setting up meetings with Heath Ledger.
Yeah, so I think that that's a little bit of a problem for the Cavs because now you have a team that legitimately may actually value Jarrett Culver and may actually, like, consider taking him. So I think that it is definitely starting at 3 still because do not trust the Knicks in a draft setting. it's bad for your health. So I think that they could still definitely be a wild card. They'd probably take RJ Barrett, but could definitely see them doing some shenanigans here. But yeah, that Pelicans move really kind of sets the Cavs back a little bit because, I mean, if RJ goes 3 and Jarrett Culver goes 4 to New Orleans, it's a tight spot for the Cavs at 5 if they don't want to make what would be considered a reach.
All right, so for New Orleans, they could trade back. They could take guys. I think Jarrett Culver would make a lot of sense for them, I think, if you're unfortunately hoping for the Cavs to get him. What are, like, the names for you? Like, if New Orleans is going to take someone and not trade back with Atlanta or whomever, who are the people at the 4 spot that you think, like, actually makes sense for them? Culver, obviously, I think, just clearly would fill a need, but are there anyone else there that you think could make some sense?
I think that it's probably the names that we've heard: DeAndre Hunter, Kobe White, Darius Garland, and Cam Reddish. I think are the guys who are who they consider. I think that every one of them but Garland, it makes sense there. White doesn't make, like, a ton of sense, but I could see that being a little bit better or more workable than Garland. I mean, if we're talking guys they should consider, Brandon Clark would be wonderful, would probably be a lot better for them than a lot of the other players that they're considering, but not realistic. So not really somebody that you should hang your hat on. I think it's down to White, Hunter, or Reddish, or actually Garland, Hunter, or Reddish at 5 is who they will take. And I think that Hunter and Reddish are probably the two that they should take from that list.
So when I think about New Orleans, I don't, like, have a good read on what they're going to do. I don't think we just, like, have any, like, clear idea yet, but, them trading with Atlanta would make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I think that it could. I mean, you might as well buy yourself multiple lottery tickets in this draft, especially with the shenanigans that are probably going to go in the middle. You're probably going to be able to find yourself in a pretty good spot to take a good player at 10 or 17 or 8, whatever combination of picks they got from Atlanta. That's another one where I'm kind of like, I don't know what realistically is going to happen with that Atlanta pick. I don't think that they're going to end up moving multiple picks to be able to move up to 5. I think it's going to be kind of more a situation where maybe they like package one pick for like a first next year or something, just because like they're in kind of a weird spot with kind of those three mid-tier picks where it's hard to kind of get an enticing package to really be able to move up significantly. But you know, if the Cavs ended up with 10 and 17, that isn't the worst thing in the world, because like I said, I mean, Brandon Clark and Grant Williams are two guys who are definitely in my top 10, and neither of them is going to go in the lottery more than likely. So I think that if you give yourself shots to take them where they're palatable, you're probably going to end up walking into a better situation than you are at 5 if Culver's gone.
All right, so when you look also just like at this draft process, what for you has just changed the most in during all of this? Like, where do you feel like things for you have shifted in how you're viewing things and how you're viewing this class since, you know, you've done so much work diving into this. What for you has really changed about how you feel about how this class from when you first started getting familiar with it to now, right before the draft?
I've become much more cynical about kind of the realistic expectations that I have for a lot of these guys, just because I think that there's just so many guys in this draft that are going to be incredibly limited and are going to be good in specific roles or are going to be good like 5 years from now. And it's really difficult to be able to project who is who among those two groups, like who actually has the skills that will translate versus who actually has the upside that will actually turn into anything meaningful. I think good representations of both of those are in the former category. Ty Jerome, who has a ton of good skills, obviously just won a national title for Virginia and looks like he's one of the smarter players in the class, but is he actually like an NBA level athlete? Is he even like a EuroLeague level athlete? Because that's a huge thing that matters, that he's going to struggle with at the next level. So I have gotten to the point where I kind of sour on, okay, maybe he's not the best fit for the Cavs at 26 because I don't know that he's going to be playable in the NBA, versus like in the upside category, Cam Reddish. Like, yeah, he's being billed as a guy who could be a future ball handler, but he's not good at any of the things that modern NBA ball handlers are good at. And he has kind of some tendencies that worry me a little bit. So how realistic is it to expect him to get to that level? So I've really had a hard time kind of parsing that, and kind of the more that I've done it, the less optimistic I've been about kind of where this draft class is going to come. And part of that comes from, you know, the whiplash that you get coming from last year's class, which was phenomenal, going into this year where it's like, yeah, there's one guy and maybe like two or three others who are like sure rotation players on good teams. That's a really tough way to meter your expectations. So it's kind of been a year long. I kind of disregarded this class has some guys. Like, I kind of disregarded kind of the this is an all time bad draft talk early, and within the last like month and a half, I have kind of firmly said on, no, this draft class is really rough, and banking anything like in your future on like trying to get a star out of this class, not at one, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Okay, and then to look at the Cavs specifically in this, I'm writing about this. I have something that like is either up or will be up very shortly when you're listening to this podcast, but I can't like figure out how, because of what this draft might be, what sort of the Cavs or position the Cavs are sort of in, I can like not figure out exactly how valuable, how important it is for the Cavs to like nail every bit of this draft in the rebuild, right? Like, I think they should be patiently rebuilding. I think they should be very just chill and not like rushing into trying to force things, and not, and like certainly being pragmatic and smart and asset collecting and getting a guy if they really really like that guy and betting a guy as they think will get better and fit their system. But I don't know if, like, this is the draft that I'm like, the Cavs have to nail this one. Now, you could argue, like, Jetty Osmond's getting closer and closer to, like, having to figure out an extension already. Colin Sexton's, like, not going to be super cheap forever. You have other kind of questions. But, like, where do you stand on, like, the Cavs needing to nail this draft in every capacity in terms of them successfully going into year two post-LeBron?
Well, I mean, every pick matters. And,
right.
And you need to be looking to hit and get guys. It's just kind of a matter of what level are you trying to hit. And I think that that's the big argument that I've been having with Cavs fans as of late, is what are you expecting out of this draft class? Because there are ways to help your rebuild that aren't getting a star. You can pick up really good talent that doesn't end up being like one of your top three best players, but ends up being a valuable piece for whatever you're going to end up becoming.
And the Cavs aren't getting a star. They're not, like, unless they get Jarrett Culver and Jarrett Culver turns into like Paul George, they're not getting a star in this draft class,
yeah.
I would guess.
Yeah. So I think that you can definitely aim for getting a really solid rotation player. You may not be getting like your Nikola Jokic in this draft class. Definitely not in this second round. But go get you a Gary Harris. Go get you a guy who is going to be like on a reasonable second contract and is going to be a really vital player to your team, even though he's not one of your three best players in year five of your rebuild. That's who you're targeting this year.
So I'm going to also just run you through real quick a fun game of the Cavs, their first-round draft picks. Now, this is, of course, there are some guys that got traded in this from 2011 to 2014, Trevor. How many of those guys, some of them are very obvious, how many of those can you name? And I'm going to make a point at the end of this. 2011 to 2014.
We're talking all draft picks.
Only first round draft picks. I'm not counting like the random, like Milan Machvan does not count towards this.
Oh, because I mean, I could probably do those too.
See, you could do those because you've been cutting Milan Machvan tape, like, because that's just what you do. But give me the first round picks 2011 to 2014.
2011 is Kyrie and Tristan. Mm-hmm. 2012 is Dion. Mm-hmm. 2013 is Anthony Bennett and Sergei Karasev, which is exactly what you want to avoid in this draft.
Like, that is the worst case scenario if they come away with that again. Oh boy, what's Sergei Karasev up to these days, by the way?
Still chugging away as the lead scorer for Zenit St. Petersburg. I think still playing for his dad. I think his dad is still the coach there.
Nepotism.
A solid, like, fifth best team in the Russian league.
Okay, that's good for him. And then 2014 is obviously
Andrew Wiggins.
You traded for Kevin Love. The one you missed was 2012. They had the second first-round pick, number 24 overall, took Jared Cunningham. And then
that doesn't count.
Okay, no, let me finish.
They turned it into Tyler Zeller. That's right.
Traded Cunningham and Jay Crowder, who was their pick in the top of the second round, like at 34 or something for Tyler Zeller. So my point here is this. The Cavs are in year two of this sort of retooling. John Beilein called it a renaissance. That's like just good branding. So golf clap for John Beilein.
Cavs coaches, stop making these quotes. You don't have to make these quotes.
Don't get mad at me when I use the word rebuild, Cavs, okay? It's a freaking rebuild. Like, it's fine. Just lean into it. It's cool. The Cavs, when they built last time post-LeBron, let's just say, like, I don't think there was a cohesive vision for the franchise other than, like, let's make the playoffs.
Yeah, let's just say that.
Like, it was.
That's being nice.
I'm being gentle. I'm feeling loving these days, Trevor. Like, they are just in a position. Like, you and I were like just starting out really in our blogging and basketball media careers at this time. Like, I can distinctly remember like going into a 9 a.m. class when they traded for Spencer Hawes and being like, oh well, at least they have, like, he may have bad toilet paper, deep cut there, but he can at least run a pick and roll with Kyrie. And like. Was it Mo Spates and like Wayne Ellington were like revelations for the Cavs because they were just like competent players that like helped their young guys. The Cavs from 2011 to 2014, like basically like get Kyrie, who is very good aside from all the others. Just Tristan was a huge part of the 2016 title team and it was a big locker room leader last year. But the other picks after that don't work out. Dion doesn't work out. Jared Cunningham, like, actually came back to the Cavs, but, like, Tyler Zeller didn't work out. Jay Crowder, funnily enough, didn't work out either, even though they took him. and got him back later. Anthony Bennett, don't need to get into that. Sergei Karasev, currently playing in Russia, tells you everything you need to know. Andrew Wiggins, obviously, isn't good now, and yes, he gets you Kevin Love, but LeBron is the reason, that draft era isn't, destroying the Cavs now, right? He gets them the title. Bennett gets washed away after year because you go get Kevin Love. Kevin Love wants to come to the Cavs and is, there now to maybe help them grow now because of LeBron James. Kyrie Irving reaches the heights that he did in part because of LeBron James. LeBron, I've said this a lot, and it's, just, I don't want to say this, way, way too much, but I just, LeBron is not coming back again to just, save you, right? You cannot bank on him coming back or recruit the hell out of him the next couple seasons in backdoor ways like they did last time to try and get him back and save you. They have to build confidently now, and, as much as, maybe this draft is not the end-all, be-all and everything, who they take will matter. What they do with assets will matter. Are they aggressive? Do they get into more asset accumulation? If 2018, starting with Colin Sexton, and if you want to say Jetty Osmond's you could lump him in there because he comes over in 2017. And Zizic, you could put in there as well because he's a young guy, etc. You put those guys in there, and you want to stretch this out to, let's say, 2021. And if they don't come, if their draft sheet from this era looks like that one, something, they've done this wrong again, frankly. And, they have to learn from, I think, this last time. That's why this draft to me is so fascinating. Because this, if Colin Sexton was, the eighth pick and you just liked his work ethic and you just wanted to, you trust that guy. Okay, now you got Beeline. You know more you have in Sexton, you think. Jetty in year three, all this stuff. What is your next foundation piece? And, what are you trying to build? This is where we start to find that out. And that, to me, is more interesting than, anything else. And it doesn't have to be every pick. Not every pick is going to work out. I just want to see what they do here.
Yeah, I think the big thing for me, again, is, we talked about this last year. And I remember in the immediate post-draft, recap from when they picked Colin Sexton, and what I said was, at least they showed some sort of process, and that's an improvement over what they've done before. So I'm looking to see, does that process now in year two of the Kobe Altman era, does that process continue? Do they continue to value hard workers? Do they continue to kind of go with the branding, the branding of trying to get guys who are going to kill themselves to get better? And do they kind of pick maybe this guy this time kind of along the lines of things that actually have shown to actually mean upside? Do they pick guys who make good decisions? Do they pick a guy who has good touch on the offensive end? Do they pick guys who have functional athleticism as opposed to just being able to jump out of the gym? Hi, Milwaukee. You've screwed up two consecutive first-round picks and are trying to build a team around Giannis, and it's because you picked two guys in a row who could jump high. So that's kind of what I want to see. Are they able to kind of make the next step of, okay, we know the types of guys that we like, we know the types of guys that we value. Now can we try to sift through and find the type of guy who is going to be his best with us based on what we value and what we have on the roster? And those are the things that I'm looking for more so than any individual names. I want a good explanation and process that you can follow that helps us understand why they're doing what they're doing.
All right. So if you're looking at, if you're in charge here and you do what you're kind of looking at here, what for you is the best case scenario Cavs draft that they could pull off on Thursday?
I think I've grappled with this for a while just because that 26 pick is so difficult. Trying to figure out who's going to be there. I think the ideal scenarios, when you're going for the hard worker types and also the get basketball and are good at the things that you need to be good at to actually have demonstrable upside. Jarrett Culver at 5, Grant Williams at 26. Beautiful. Love it. Doesn't matter that Williams needs to play a ton of four to be valuable. You're getting two guys who are going to will themselves to continue to get better, who have demonstrated to be really smart decision makers on the defensive end, especially, and for Grant, at least on the offensive end. Covert, he'll get there. But I think that he's a little bit behind in that regard. And you're taking two guys who just make a ton of sense for what they need on the roster in terms of their young guys. So that would be ideal. Hopefully for Grant's sake, he's not there at 25. And then I'm kind of looking at Terrence Davis of Ole Miss as kind of like my go-to at the 26 spot, just because, like, you want a guy who is good at a lot of different things, has athleticism, is going to be a hard worker, and also just has an absolute, like, killer mentality that is a real positive that I think they would really like. That's a really good fit, too.
Okay, so I would say mine is Culver. I think Culver or Hunter, and then I think someone like Thibault, Terrence Davis, Grant Williams, just someone in that kind of grouping, wings. I'm thinking wings. I'm thinking guys that could be three and develop into theoretical 3-and-D guys. I want multiple shots at those kind of guys. You and I have identified, you know, secondary playmaking, shooting, and defense as the three big needs. I think you want to draft guys that can try to at least fill one of those, and hoping for 2 to 3 in some capacity. Wrap it up, Trevor, on sort of just kind of a more bleak note. But if you were to say, like, what is the scenario that the Cavs do where what they're sort of building seems concerning? What does that look like to you? If they're going to do something on Thursday that you get a little skittish about what they might be trying to do, even if you get the logic, what does that look like? For me, it starts with taking Darius Garland, and then taking, like, the guy from, I think, Lithuania, whose name I can't remember, or a big at 26. Like, that's where I get a little shaky.
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it, and thankfully our friend Jonathan Gavoni already fleshed this out for us. Because his Monday mock had them taking Darius Garland at 5 and Luka Samanić, is he Croatian? He's Croatian or Serbian?
We should get the Eastern European things right, because, like, that's, yeah, I'll check, but continue.
Yeah, and that goes to show how much I think of Luka Samanić also.
Yeah, like, if Trevor Magnotti, he's Croatian. If Trevor Magnotti, like, the guru, like, one of the people that is the most knowledgeable about Europeans in basketball of anybody that I know, is unsure of a nationality, that says something.
Yeah. So that's a guy who directly overlaps with Colin Sexton's skill set in every way. And we've talked about what an issue that is. And then at 26, you're taking a guy who's probably best served as a draft and stash. And even if he comes over as a total project, who is going to be sitting next year at minimum at Canton, and is billed as like a 3-and-D pick and pop big, who's not really good at the defense part and hasn't proven that he's very good at the shooting part either. That's pretty bad. I would also accept taking Cam Reddish at 5, and then maybe a guy like Naz Reid or Isaiah Roby at the second pick, a guy who, like, two guys who just have a ton of physical tools but have no idea how to play the game of basketball whatsoever. I would be a little bit concerned with that too, because now I'm like, okay, the Cavs just don't understand what actually contributes to upside in the modern NBA, because they missed on a couple guys who kind of had clear aspects of that last year and now are taking probably the two worst examples of that this year. And boy, that's a list. So there's a lot of potential guys that I could see them taking where I'm like, okay, that's not good. So I think that it's less of a problem at 26, but, like, when you're coupling that with a guy like Reddish or Garland, that's when I get a little bit concerned.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. I can't wait for Thursday. There's so much intrigue. I think a lot's going to happen. But Trevor, thank you so much for coming on. Be sure to check out him on the Chase Down live breakdown of the draft. Check out all the writing he's going to do at the various places he works for after the draft. Trevor, you've earned, I think, some time off, some sleep, hopefully, like, a dessert or, like, a beer that you quite like. And thanks again for informing us throughout this whole draft journey. I hope that you, again, get some time off to just, like, recoup before you, like, start cutting, like, third division Greek tape or something in, like, middle of August.
yeah, it's gonna be a little bit of a ride. I'm sure I'll be back one more time to break it all down with you next week. So looking forward to it.